We are beginning the City of Aurora Planning Commission meeting. It is 7 p.m. on February 6, 2024. Would the recorder please call the roll?
Sure. Chairman Joseph Schaefer.
Here.
Commissioner Bud Boston.
Here.
Commissioner Jonathan Gibson.
Here.
Commissioner Bill Grell.
Here.
Commissioner Craig McNamara.
Here.
Commissioner Jim Stewart.
Here.
Commissioner Tyler Mensah is not with us.
Okay. Item three is our consent agenda where we have last month's minutes. Are there any comments on last month's minutes? Hearing none, is there a motion?
I move to accept them.
Second.
So we have Stewart and McNamara. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Motion carries. Item four is the visitor section. We don't have anyone here in the room and no one has joined us online. So I guess we're just not popular tonight.
Not tonight.
Item five is correspondence.
You're dating Taylor.
We have none. Item six.
Taylor Swift.
There is new business and there is none. We had talked about having a meeting on the River City Boat Sales Project, but that's been postponed to next month. Item number seven is we have our first public hearing on legislative text amendments to Title 8, 10, and 16, for which I am going to hand it over to Kurt in a minute. First, I will do the, we've got this legislative script. But since no one is here, I'm going to shorten it to say that we're considering legislative amendments to the city code. The Planning Commission does not make any decisions. It only makes a recommendation to the city council. If anyone were here, we would tell you you have an opportunity to testify and challenge us and so forth and so on. The opening statement and the presiding officer, I think that's me. Again, these are miscellaneous code amendments to Titles 8, 10, and 16, which we've discussed about. I mentioned it's a recommendation, which again, after my opening remarks with staff report that Kurt will handle. The presentation is by the applicant. The city is the applicant, so we'll ask Kurt to do that. After that, the public shall be invited to testify. If anyone comes between now and the time for public testimony, I'll redo this for the benefit of that person. We can continue the hearing if we want to. I'm going to skip the rest of the details and simply say we're now ready for the oral presentation of the staff report. Kurt, take it away.
So there's not a whole lot to say about it. What you have some options in there for motions for adoption as proposed or as amended. The text of the staff report generally is my best attempt to document the process that you all went through and the decisions that you made over the past year. I wasn't involved in most of the substantive work of that. So I would say the main thing to consider is just making sure that the text is what you expected to see in the staff report. And if there are any amendments or are there any changes that you need, incorporated in the version that you forward to City Council, make sure those changes are included in the motion with sufficient specificity that Stewart can document them and go in the staff report that would go to City Council with your recommendation.
Okay. Any questions of Kurt? Okay.
There was an email that I was copied on about specifically stormwater. And I think there was a question about whether the stormwater specifications were kind of vetted or whether we should continue on that discussion. And so I feel like some of the stormwater recommendations were in here, right? Or were they?
Yes. If you look at page 19 of the packet, that's where the proposed code changes.
Right.
1634.090, and it goes on to the next page.
So I guess I'm just curious. I believe the email originated with Kurt. I was just curious what the concerns were about the stormwater portion of this.
Well, my primary concern is regarding the stormwater analysis requirements. I think the way that portion of the amendments are worded mixes public works requirements with plumbing and building permit requirements in a way that's not clear and not consistent with my experience of how development gets reviewed and eventually approved. So the subsection 4, so 1634.090A4, those requirements are to evaluate the capacity of public facilities to handle additional runoff that is anticipated to be generated by a development proposal. And generally, if there are limits on those, they are expressed in the form of a impervious area that's proposed. The way that requirement is typically met in a development proposal can be very simple or very complex, depending on the scale of the application or the proposal. The analysis requirements for sites of less than 1 acre are going to be simpler. They can be as simple as a table that addresses the applicable methodology, engineering methodology for calculating stormwater runoff, but they're not insignificant. They're still important for identifying deficiencies in the stormwater system to make sure that there are no additional problems with flooding and potential runoff that could damage adjacent properties. If you look through our stormwater master plan, there's a number of deficient areas that are identified throughout the city that are likely to be affected by developments on less than 1 acre. So that is my main concern. And I don't think there's any harm in letting those requirements stand as they are so that staff has the access to the information to make decisions on impacts to those facilities. They are pretty prescriptive in most jurisdictions as far as the engineering calculations that must be done. There are specific methodologies that are widely accepted in the field of civil engineering that apply. So it tends to be very prescriptive and very objective. And then the way the amendment is framed is that there are certain requirements in the plumbing section that are intended to substitute for those requirements. And I think the confusion is that, you know, Section 4 is meant to identify public facilities, and Section Chapter 11 of the Oregon Plumbing Specialty Code applies to private improvements that are evaluated at the building permit level. So I hope that explains that a little bit better. I think the two requirements are meant to work together. They're not meant to, the building permit or the plumbing permitting requirements aren't meant to be a substitute for the civil engineering calculations. And I think in the Clackamas County memo, all the sections of the Oregon Plumbing Specialty Code are referenced, the Oregon Residential Specialty Code, and the Oregon Structural Specialty Code that should be being evaluated now with current development. My understanding is that those state requirements apply to all development, whether they're specifically incorporated in a city code or not. And typically where they are incorporated is in Title 15 regarding buildings and construction. Other codes I've noticed, they're addressed in a title of the same thing. So that summarizes my my input on that particular matter.
So the concern is that there is a kind of conflating of public works code and private property code.
Correct.
In here.
So that the analysis in Section 4 generally happens before building permits come in, and then the the plumbing requirements apply when a building permit comes in to actually build a structure and install the private improvements. And they're related. The improvements that are identified in Section 4 are often what the plumbing requirements, such as rain drains and other facilities, plug into when they come in for that building permit or plumbing permit, structural permit, and items like crawl spaces and low point drains that are interior to buildings are typically not reviewed at the same time of development as the engineering requirements, the public works requirements. So that is the concern. It may be of limited consequence to have that in there, to have that language in there. But I can definitely see it being confusing for an applicant or any other city staff that's reviewing a proposal for compliance with that section.
So what we are trying to do with that is, first of all, create a sort of a two-track system so that smaller projects do not require the engineering analysis, because sometimes that gets expensive and it's very costly, especially in relation to the scale of some projects. So the thought was, okay, we'll do that, but we don't want people to read the zoning code to say or to mean that they're just completely exempt. So that's why we took and adapted some of that Clackamas County language and put it in here right under, in Section 4. So would you suggest that we just delete all that plumbing code stuff? Do you think it's...
I would suggest you delete the plumbing code stuff. I would suggest you incorporate the current specialty code versions in Title 15. If you want to if you want to limit the amount of engineering analysis that needs to go into developing smaller sites, I suggest you establish a threshold based on impervious area and not total area of the site, because you can have a site less than an acre, say a 40,000 square foot site that has say 25,000 square feet of impervious area, and you can have a site of say 44,000 square feet or 45,000 square feet that has perhaps only 10 or 15% or 10 or 15,000 square feet of impervious area. And that way the engineering requirements are proportionate to the impervious area that actually generates the runoff into the system rather than the area of the entire site.
Okay, so
10,000 feet is I believe what is in Salem.
Okay, so on page 20, okay, so you would delete all that boldface, top half of page 20, basically.
Correct.
Okay.
And then I would just add a reference in Title 15 of the code, saying that those specialty codes are adopted, just to make it clear that our building permit review team is aware to review those requirements.
Okay.
They should be paying attention to those already, is my understanding, but.
Sure. So I want to talk with the commission here about this idea of changing the threshold from property acreage to impervious surface. So impervious surface of 10,000 square feet, that is, you know, so for a single family lot, they're going to be well under the exemption.
So for a single family lot, the stormwater calculations should have been done at the subdivision level.
Well, we have a lot of odd lots left over in town. So that's what I was thinking about. But a typical single, I mean, we've got, you know, a fair number of large lots, as you guys know. Mine is 19,000. Craig, how much is yours?
120.
120 what?
Square
feet?
Yeah. Isn't it? No, 12. There we go.
Okay. So
orders of magnitude. So, who cares?
So Craig could like triple the size of his house and still be under the 10,000 foot threshold. I think up in Jonathan's neighborhood,
it's 15,000 because of the septic.
Okay.
Requirements.
Right. So if you couldn't hear that, Kurt, in the subdivision that Jonathan lives, there are 15,000, give or take, and up size lots.
Yeah. So,
but I would say their current lot coverage, two-story houses, you know, two-car width driveways, you know, the current lot coverage of impervious surface is probably going to be less than 3,000 on most of those.
Oh, man. Right. The point that I'm making is that typically a stormwater analysis is required with the approval of the subdivision. So those flooding impacts should have been addressed at the subdivision level, and the entire subdivision should have been engineered properly to mitigate those risks. The appropriate infrastructure should have been installed. Everything should be graded the correct way to make sure that those facilities function correctly. And the facilities should be there available for the plumbing requirements to plug into that system on those residential lots. So I can't say for sure that's the case in your particular instances. But that's when those standards are supposed to be addressed.
So how do people feel about switching from 1 acre to 10,000 square feet of impervious surface?
That's a lot of space. My front yard's 20,000.
Kurt, are you aware of Marion County code that says any property less than half an acre does not require any stormwater retention?
No, I'm not.
If need be, I can find the reference and send it to you.
So half an acre, that's approximately 20,000 square feet.
Right.
22,000 square feet or so.
So what I like about Kurt's idea is that, and there are some exceptions I know, but most people have a fairly low ratio of impervious surface to the lot size. And of course, as the decades go on, there's more people that have more impervious surface because they don't like landscaping and they just pave stuff. But what I think we may miss that Kurt pointed out is in a commercial property, a 1 acre commercial property that could provide a hair under 1 acre commercial property that's going to be all buildings and pavement except for a little bit of landscaping will generate an awful lot of stormwater. So I'm kind of liking Kurt's suggestion of go with the Salem threshold,
okay,
which is 10,000 square feet of impervious surface.
All right.
I see a nod from Bill. I hear an all right from Jim. Jonathan, does that make sense?
Seems like that would impact fewer people.
Yeah, a lot fewer
properties.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it helps our goal and of simplifying things for smaller projects while making sure that the bigger ones do the work, especially the bigger commercial ones who, in part, you know, have the budget to do it.
Okay. I like it.
Nodding, Bud?
Yeah.
Okay. So thank you very much for that suggestion, Kurt. And so now I am going to, that's one. So I'll articulate this one, then we'll talk about the second one. So Stuart, where it says for sites of 1 acre or larger. Okay.
This on page 20.
Page 19. Last paragraph.
Before section 4.
No, right in the beginning of section 4.
Yeah.
Okay, so instead of saying for sites of 1 acre or larger, say for sites with 10,000 square feet or more of impervious surface. Parenthesis, new and existing. Close parenthesis.
Yeah.
Okay. A stormwater analysis, yada, yada, yada.
Okay.
Okay. So now.
Is that per acre?
No, that's per site, per project. So.
You can eliminate per site less than 1 acre.
Yeah, so the question is, again, for all this stuff on page 20, what we are trying to do is just make it known to people that you're subject to the building code, which they're subject to anyhow. So I'm kind of liking Kurt's idea of just taking it out.
Yeah.
I'm seeing him one, yeah. I'm seeing a nod from Bill, a nod from Jim, a nod from Jonathan.
Fine with me.
Okay. And Bud says he's fine with it. Okay. So we'll take that suggestion as well, Kurt. Thank you. So all the bold print on page 20
is gone.
Of 69, 20 of the packet, page 9 of the staff report, goes.
Where's that again?
That's page 20 of the packets.
On the screen up.
Oh, I got to put my glasses on. Next page.
Right there.
Yeah, that.
All that text goes?
Yeah.
Where can you reference that text? Or is it out?
Well, it's in the building code. It happens at a later stage. So these are changes in Title 16, which are what people get land use approvals for. But these provisions will be applied by the then current version of the building code when people apply for buildings.
Should that be referenced in this? see the building code for blah, blah, blah?
Well,
if the special codes reference above for the first one.
I'm kind of liking the idea of just let's not talk about the building code. Okay. I mean, this is the zoning code. So that's why I'm liking the idea of leaving it out. Because it's going to be less of a risk later that we'd have someone come in and say, well, you know, the building code rephrases it. It doesn't use that word anymore. So, you know, yada, yada, yada. Okay. Okay. Any other recommended changes? Okay. Hearing none, is there a motion?
I move to accept your changes.
Okay. And do you want to recommend the council recommend to the city council that they approve the application as amended?
Sure.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay. The motion carries. Thank you, Kurt, for those good suggestions.
Thank you for being receptive to my suggestions.
Oh, yeah. I'm not as stubborn as I think. Not always, anyhow. Okay, next on our agenda is old business. We have the airport land use update. Jonathan, any news from the PAM?
No. Just updates on existing projects, primarily. They're still debating the tree issue and the easements needed to accomplish that. So,
off-site tree stuff?
Yeah, okay. I doubt if there'll be any movement in another 6 months, but they'll get them eventually.
Okay.
It's a matter of budgeting the money for it by the FAA, apparently. So, still short of controllers. That again, won't change anytime quickly. And I think that about does it.
Okay. From my perspective, we have the usual topics, and I'll just go through with an update on each of them. The first TLM case for development of the church camp, we had a hearing at the Marion County Circuit Court the first Friday in January, still on a motion to dismiss, or motions plural to dismiss. I'm still haven't gotten the decision from the judge on that. So that's in a holding pattern. As I think I mentioned last time, TLM has submitted a new application to Marion County. This application is all helicopters, and included in the packet are a couple pages from that, including sort of the narrative part of the traffic study and the site plan. The main changes in the site plan are that the buildings are slightly smaller, and instead of, depending on which plan you looked at, it was between like 480 and 511, I think, parking spaces. This one has 277 parking spaces. It still leaves the southwest corner of the property more or less open for through the fence uses. And this is described in the applicant's narrative, which I didn't include because it's 120 pages. But they're leaving that option open. Okay. They're also saying on the last page of this report, which is 66 of 69 in the packet, that they're not sure whether the transportation planning rule applies, which is interesting. I'm not going to agree, but it's interesting. I have not gone through this in complete detail yet. I'm going to try and do that soon. I think they're getting a little creative with some of their assumptions. You may remember last time for the first application, we challenged some of their traffic assumptions successfully regarding trip generation And I suspect we'll be doing that again. The other pages that are included, well, before I leave the traffic study, I don't know if any of you had a chance to look at it, if you have any questions about it.
I looked at it there. They said something about Orange Road being four lane. Well, it's four lane over that little section between Airport Road and 551. That's not four lane all the way through. So does that affect anything?
Well, I'm not even sure it's four lanes there. Have to look at an area.
Next to Columbia Helicopters.
Yeah, this is four lanes.
Yeah, but just that one circle.
It merges. Towards Cambie merges into two lanes.
Right.
Yeah.
And as it goes,
it's four lanes all the way to Four Point Farms. It turns into four lanes to 551,
but between 551 and Airport Road, it's not four lanes all the way through. Because the implication is it's
all the way. Four lanes all the way from 551.
Okay,
it's two lanes under the railroad track, though.
Yeah, no, yeah. You said from airport from 551 to Airport Road, it's four lanes.
Okay. Other comments on this? Okay. The other piece of the application that was submitted were support letters from Life Flight in Columbia in the narrative. And again, if anybody wants it, I'm happy to send it to you. I might have to break it up into a couple different files for sizing. But they're basically saying this is an application for expansion of Columbia and Life Flight's existing helicopter operations on the airport. You may recall the last application was also had a big building designated on it for Life Flight. The last application also had a designation for Wilson Construction, but they have regular planes as well. And they're not mentioned in this application. Okay. Questions about any of this?
No.
Okay. Okay, so those are the TLM cases. The 2012 master plan case that is still sitting at the Court of Appeals is still sitting at the Court of Appeals, waiting for a decision. Again, there's no specific deadline for the court to issue their decision, but I expect to get it sometime this year. Regarding the new master plan, there was going to be a meeting of the Public Advisory Committee last week. But that got canceled just a day or two before the meeting because the FAA approval of the forecast numbers for flight operations changed. And I frankly don't know whether the forecast number went up or down. I haven't been tracking that closely. But anyhow, they changed, and I'm not sure why it changed at the last minute. I don't know. Maybe Bill knows. Do you know?
The meeting was canceled because when the meeting, the information for the meeting was posted, the links were incorrect on the ODAP website, and several participants complained that they didn't have enough time because the links weren't working. So they fixed the links and delayed the meeting to give the people who were complaining more time to analyze all of the information that was returned from the FAA.
Okay. Do you know why the FAA approval of the forecast has got those numbers changed?
They had their own method of calculation that updated the numbers.
Okay. Do you know if the numbers went up or down?
I don't know. I didn't pay attention to the previous numbers.
Okay.
The current numbers.
And do you know, has the meeting been rescheduled yet?
Yeah, March. March something.
Okay.
Keep talking and I'll let you know.
Okay, well, I think that's my four. I must be missing something. Give me a second. Oh, well, yeah, we've got the EOA as a separate matter, but I'll go ahead and start that while Bill fishes that date out. Okay, so the
economic... airport master plan meeting is on the 12th.
March 12th.
Let's see, 5 to 7.
Okay, so I'll say that loudly into the microphone. March 12th, 5 p.m. to 7.
Yeah, the city council meeting starts at 7 right after that. So,
okay. Okay, then the next airport topic, which is a separate line item here, is, and it's not just the airport, but it's economic opportunities analysis. The document that's attached in there is regarding rulemaking that's happening by the state on the sort of the target industries approach, which generally speaking is the airport part of the EOA. Now, this rule will not be in effect for us. They're just kind of getting started. The rule probably won't be in effect for a couple of years, and we hope to finish next summer. That said, my own personal goal is, and the suggestion to the group, is that we follow the spirit and letter of this sort of draft, issues list as best we can. Our consultant is very aware of this going on and is going to be part of the rulemaking advisory committee. And so I want to just flag that for people and let you know that it's out there, but it's not going to directly apply, but we're paying close attention to it. Any questions about that?
Which list are you talking about?
Page 69 of 69 of the packet. There's all the bullet points.
Okay, yeah.
So the sort of the topics for the rulemaking.
Got it. Okay.
Okay. Then as for our own progress on the EOA, we had our first technical advisory committee meeting, which was sort of introductory and very useful for people to say what they viewed everything as. The next technical advisory committee meeting is not yet scheduled, but we have it penciled in for late February or March, but we're probably going to miss that date because there was a delay in getting employment information from the state. We had sent the request to the state in a timely manner, but it took longer than expected to get the data back. The data is closely guarded and highly sensitive and encrypted, and I don't even think I'm going to look at it. But our consultant has it and has experience with working with the data, and is allowed to aggregate the data for reporting purposes for doing the EOA. But the actual nitty-gritty data is carefully protected, so it won't be in your packet. It won't be in the land use record. If anybody wants to see it, I could see about getting you permission to look at it. But personally, I think I'm just going to rely on the consultant to do what he does. That's what we, hired the consultant to do. Does anybody have any questions about that data or other questions about the EOA?
No.
Okay, that's the last item on the agenda. Is there anything else that people would like to talk about? Okay, hearing none, we will adjourn. Thank you for coming, Kurt. That is...
You close the public hearing.
Thank you.
We never opened it, I thought.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, yeah. We forgot to close the public hearing. We'll close the public hearing belatedly at 7:40 p.m. Thank you, Bud.
Yeah.
And we will also adjourn the Planning Commission meeting at 7:40 p.m. Thank you, everyone.
Mike.